The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but does Christianity really belong in the classroom? For that matter, does any discussion of God belong in the public school at all? That's a very interesting question. Let me answer it with a twist, because a rather twisted story is in the news right now. I'm reading from FoxNews.com, April 7, 2010. A Tennessee school board has decided to postpone its decision on banning a textbook after a father told the board its bias against Christians. Kurt Zimmerman is appealing a Knoxville school district's decision to keep the book. He says the textbook used in his son's biology class cites creationism as a biblical myth. According to reports, Zimmerman requests non-biased textbooks be used. In his words, the current textbook's phrasing misleads, belittles, and discourages students in believing in creationism and calls the Bible a myth. Okay, that was from Fox News, April 7th, just a couple of days ago. Now, I have only a few brief comments to add, because I always have a few brief comments to always add. Whatever happened to separation between church and state? True, those words are not actually found in the Constitution, but for the moment, I have no wish to confuse anyone with facts. So supposedly, discussions of religion do not belong in the classroom. At least that's what those who coined the separation clause, the separation phantom clause, that's what they always tell us. So if that were true, let's assume for a moment that that were true, how come the separation doesn't work both ways? If a discussion of God, or if a discussion of Genesis is inappropriate for a secular school, then please show at least an ounce of consistency and stop talking about God. Stop talking about Genesis. If you don't want to talk about, don't talk about it. Who says you even have to bring it up? Or do people want to claim some inherent right to teach the falsehood of Christianity, all the while denying that this same freedom of speech extends to those who would defend the Bible? That makes about as much sense as, well, actually, it makes about as much sense as everything else going on in our country lately, but you ain't heard nothing yet. I am going to tell you about some other insane attacks against Christianity later on in today's program. First, on to other news. President Obama recently dropped into Afghanistan with a surprise pep talk for our troops. And it worked. It actually worked. They got all pepped up. In the midst of his sparkling oratory discourse, he inspired the men by reminding them that America never gives up until it finishes the job. The troops applauded. I would applaud those words, too. Good words, moving words, good speech, great speech, of course. Back when Obama announced at West Point that he was going to commit more troops to Afghanistan, he also gave us a timetable. He was going to bring the troops home in 2012. He said nothing on that day about the job needing to be finished. He did mumble some stuff about evaluating the situation, which probably means that he will look at his approval polls to see what the public wants him to do. 2012, after all, coincides by an amazing coincidence with an election year. Is this the bravest commander-in-chief we've ever had, or what? Ike? Eat your heart out. Eat your heart out, Eisenhower. But Obama is good with an audience. Let's give credit where credit is due. When it comes to working the crowd, Obama is a grand master. His latest catch line has the scent of boast and glory. I guess he feels he's entitled to a few victory laps after a year of dissension and debate, which split even his own Democratic Party. A trophy can now be placed on the mantle because dead but recently resurrected healthcare legislation has transformed from thousands of indecipherable pages to a fresh, new, living law of the land. Now, I'm reading from the UK Telegraph, the United Kingdom Telegraph, 3/27/10. And here's what they had to say about this special victory speech that Obama made, even though he recognized that he was kind of ridiculing the Republican Party. Here are the words of the UK Telegraph. Rather than wooing Republicans, Mr. Obama has now turned to mocking them. And then the article quotes Obama. Leaders of the Republican Party, they called the message of this bill Armageddon, Mr. Obama told the chuckling audience. End of freedom as we know it. So after I signed the bill, I looked around to see if there were any asteroids falling or some cracks opening up in the earth. It turned out it was a nice day. Birds were chirping. Folks were strolling down the mall. People still have their doctors. He dared Republicans to try to repeal the bill. My attitude? Go for it. Okay, those were the quotes from Barack Obama in the UK Telegraph. Now, that line, the line about cracks opening up in the earth, it proved so effective, he's repeated it since then in one speech after another. Well, yes, we certainly have a happy president these days, but clear as the sky may be, there were some consequences of a different nature, and they reared their little heads faster than the ink could dry from Obama's signature on the bill. After actually reading the new Book of Golden Rules, something the high majority of Congress never did, and examining its tax liabilities, an alarming number of corporations warned that they would follow a series of cutbacks and layoffs as a natural consequence of this financial nightmare of a law. It began when the high-tech equipment company Caterpillar insisted the tax hikes would rip open a $100 million liability on their first quarter because our new law slices the tax deduction businesses are allowed for providing health care benefits to retirees. Other companies, such as Verizon, have followed suit with similar predictions of less than prosperous days ahead. Then there are the cuts to Medicare, included to make room for poor and or non-working citizens' rationed health care with Medicaid. The new juggling act is paid for by a working population now mandated by law to purchase health care against their will or pay a substantial fine. When Republicans warned that Obamacare was only an excuse for a redistribution of wealth, they were accused of fear-mongering. A lot of people accused me of fear-mongering over the air and on my blogs. I was just worrying the people. And yet the stuff I told you was going to be in the bill, hey, Jack, hey, McFly, it's in the bill. Yet now the horse is broken out of the corral, so our Democratic politicians feel free to describe this animal more accurately. Nice to hear them talk accurately, at least. Better late than never. Vice President Biden said, if you want to call this a redistribution of wealth, so be it. Well, good one, Joe. And then Senator Max Baucus relayed the following in a recent speech. He said, and I quote, too often, much of late, the last couple 3 years, the maldistribution of income in America has gone way up too much. The wealthy are getting way, way too wealthy, and the middle income class is left behind. Wages have not kept up with increased income for the highest income in America. This legislation will have the effect of addressing that maldistribution of income in America. Well, since our lustrous new health care bill of 1,000-plus pages was too big even for Arnold Schwarzenegger to bench press, cannot do the curls either. Well, we're still waiting, as Nancy Pelosi invited us to find out what's in the bill after it passes. For this reason only, time will reveal the bottom of Obama's bag of tricks. But I'll mention one more, because this one is out in the open. Now, all decisions between a doctor, a patient, and a private healthcare provider must be run by the government for approval. How fun is that? Watch out, Grandma. They may just decide that your hip replacement is too expensive, and with only so much money to go around, your treatment could be denied. But you've lived your life. You've lived a good, full life. We have to think about the global village. After all, Grandma, it's not all about you. Well, at least when it was denied by a private sector insurance company, Grandma was able to appeal. Under the new law, no appeal is allowed. President Obama, you are absolutely right. No meteors have fallen and no cracks have appeared on the Earth's surface. But let's not kid ourselves. Your multi-limb law is a close runner-up. And while we're on the subject of a safe planet Earth, Obama just made the planet a whole lot safer by deciding not to call our enemies radical Muslim terrorists anymore. People were calling them that to distinguish them from the more peaceful Muslims, but now we can't even admit that any Muslims are terrorists. Yeah, that'll do it. I mean, the terrorists themselves brag about the fact that they are Muslims obeying the Quran, but let's not call them what they call themselves, for crying out loud. And what are we going to call them? We could call them Hindu terrorists. That way we'll pick on another religion. Well, no. We shouldn't pick on any religion at all, I guess. And we shouldn't call them terrorists. We don't want to use the word terrorist at all. In fact, that's off the table. Now, how about Middle Eastern Band of Brothers, which spreads harmony around the land in their obedient quest for 72 virgins? Does that one sell? Yeah, now all the Muslim companies and all the Muslim countries of the world are going to just love America. People like Ahmadinejad, he's crazy. He's nuts about Obama's benign policies. That's why he calls Obama a cowboy, just like everybody else called George Bush a cowboy. I didn't think anybody could ever confuse Barack Obama with George Bush, but Ahmadinejad seems to. He seems to hate America no matter what we do. Ahmadinejad, it's not a very accurate assessment of Obama, but then since when did we expect accuracy from a Holocaust denier? No, he is not impressed with our president, even though Obama promised that we will never use nuclear weapons on countries who themselves don't use nuclear weapons. I mean, that's fair, isn't it? You can go ahead and use your chemical weapons. You can go ahead and use your biological weapons. But if those are the only weapons you use, we won't nuke you. Because the biological, chemical stuff, that doesn't count. If you at least promise not to nuke us, we won't nuke you. Actually, dictators consider such concession an act of weakness to be exploited. They particularly consider it an act of weakness in the Middle East culture. And they particularly consider that an act of weakness in the Muslim religion. But Obama believes this is going to keep us safe. And I think he truly believes it. Boy, I don't know what his family and friends and scholarships paid to put this guy through Harvard. But you gotta believe me, it was too much. Meanwhile, there's a sad turn of events toward those who truly did keep us safe once upon a time. The ACLU is taking our CIA agents and literally handing them over to our enemies. That's right. It's time for our ACLU update. The instigation of Attorney General Eric Holder, Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald is looking into a harrowing story and determining whether or not laws were broken after paparazzi-style photographs of CIA officers were discovered in the cell of a Guantanamo Bay prisoner, a man accused of financing the terrorist attacks of 9/11. American Civil Liberties Union Project official Denny LeBue, assistant for the defense of this same detainee in question, also hired private detectives to photograph CIA officers suspected of torturing terrorist suspects. Although he does not deny these actions, LeBue still insists in an interview with online investigative news organization TM Muckraker that no laws were broken. LeBue directs the ACLU's John Adams Project, which supplied lawyers for five Guantanamo Bay inmates. And here's what he said. The lawyers that I have been working with have complied with both the letter and the spirit of every law and the protective orders issued by the military commission. And then ACLU President Anthony Romero admitted to Newsweek that investigators were indeed hired to locate CIA officers supposedly connected with torture, but he went out of his way to add to his knowledge the 9/11 defendants were not told the identities of the CIA officers. Well, maybe that's true. Maybe that isn't true. I'm just a little suspicious when the ACLU calls its John Adams project admirable, quote unquote, for creating a list of CIA agents suspected of unorthodox questioning techniques. Such dope on the CIA was compiled through the tracking of international flights, hotels, and phone records. Other human rights groups share these same lists. Now, why are the lists being compiled at all? So that they cannot be made public? Even so, nobody is denying this picture, which turned up in the cell. For the record, U.S. Attorney Fitzgerald successfully prosecuted Bush administration official Louis Libby for perjuring himself in that controversial case about the inappropriate disclosure of another CIA agent, Valerie Plame. Remember that one? I don't seem to recall the ACLU sticking up for Libby at that time or claiming that no laws were violated, but then that would have meant helping a Bush appointee. Can't have that from the ACLU. Look, whatever your opinion may be regarding the use of torture or just exactly what constitutes torture under the Bush administration, these CIA agents were doing their job and they were doing it legally according to what the law was at that time. Why would anybody want to work for the CIA anymore after such an act of betrayal? Why will people still volunteer to protect us if we hang them out to dry for doing so? For myself, nothing, and I mean nothing, the ACLU does will surprise me. Remember, this is the same ACLU and the same ACLU President Anthony Romero who back in 2008 enthusiastically volunteered to defend Khahid Sheikh Mohammed, the 9/11 mastermind. And notice I didn't say alleged mastermind. I'm not going to call him the alleged mastermind. He's the mastermind. How do I know that? Elementary, my dear Watson, the guy actually confessed. He was happy about it. He bragged about it. He wants a public forum to talk about it even more. So let's be clear. When a man boasts of his hatred for our country, our Constitution, and our very way of life, when this same man confesses to orchestrating the cold-blooded murder of 3,000 American citizens, the ACLU feels a passionate need to defend his rights, ignoring the fact that his rights do not actually exist in America because A, he is an enemy combatant and therefore not protected by our Constitution, and B, he is a self-proclaimed nemesis to our Constitution. He wants to destroy our Constitution. As for CIA agents seeking to defend our Constitution, the ACLU doesn't seem particularly concerned about their rights. Okay, that's a lot of stuff. But we're going to get through this. I know it's intense. I know it's overwhelming. I talk about it because I have to talk about it. People like me, and I'm not the only one, radio talk show hosts and many, many others are rising up all over the country. I'm only doing a small, small part. We have to talk about this because we have to keep our wits about us. We have to hang together. But things are going to get better. And one thing that always helps me is to stop and take a deep breath and listen to beautiful, reflective music.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. Tell her to make me a cambric shirt, a deep forest green, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, snowflakes, and snow-crested brown, without no sleep. She'll be a true love of mine. I'm aware of a cloudy and calm salt water as he strands and polishes a gun. And she'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to reap it in a sickle that was blazing in scarlet battalion. Parsley's angels, Mary and Gerald's born in the soldiers to kill and gather it all and to fight for the cause they long ago forgotten. She'll be a true love of mine. Scarborough Fair, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. Now, I usually don't care about this public figure's opinion, this public figure that I'm going to mention in a moment. I don't usually care about his opinion. So when he shut off his mouth a while back, I didn't talk about it. I didn't blog about it. I was occupied with more important subjects. But today, I do think we should take a second look. Dictator of Cuba, Fidel Castro, has commented on Obamacare. The verdict? He likes it. How about that? He likes it. Hey, Mikey. Now, honestly, tell me the truth. Isn't this endorsement alone enough to settle our opinion of that issue? Whatever else you thought about it before, wouldn't the endorsement of Castro just kind of settle the issue? Anyway, speaking of issues, do you know what this coming Thursday is? I'll give you a hint. The corresponding date is April 15th. I'll take tax day for 50, Johnny. Yes, that's right. Thank you for playing. Now, I know how depressing tax day can be, but something else is going on all over the country on this very same day, tea parties. And the San Diego area doesn't want to be left out. A tea party is going on in Oceanside on that day from 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Oceanside Pier Amphitheater. And some of the guests that are lined up already, gubernatorial candidate Steve Poizner, gubernatorial candidate Larry Naratelli, U.S. Senator candidate Chuck DeVore, Attorney General candidate John Eastman, Lieutenant Governor candidate Scott Levitt, State Senator Mark Weiland, State Assemblywoman Diane Harkley, and Sheriff candidate Jay LeSueur, who I've interviewed. He's a great guy, but I'm well-motivated to say that. I figure it never hurts to have a sheriff as a friend. That's just wisdom all the way around. Anyway, the candidates will take your questions in a town hall format, time permitting. The candidates will certainly have information booths, and there's an activity area for your children, so you don't have to worry about little Buford being bored. There will be something for him to do as well. Plenty of parking near the Coaster and City Hall Library. I will be there as well, along with KCBQ talk show host Rick Amato. In fact, Rick will be recording the event for his own program. So if you can't make it live, you can hear it that evening on the Rick Amato Show at 9 o'clock. I will be a guest for part of his program. He'll also be interviewing the various speakers and politicians from the Tea Party. So come join Rick Amato live and come join me live in person, or at least catch us on the recorded broadcast that evening, April 15th, for Tax Day Tea Party. But wait, there's more, much more. There's also another event, very different kind of event in nature coming up next Sunday. I will be performing a one-man play entitled The Melting Candle. This is a dramatic reading of a script I wrote quite a number of years ago. It's already been performed in different parts of the country, but next week I will be performing it locally here in San Diego. How would Jesus Christ be treated by our church clergy if he casually returned to this world and visited some of our churches? Do you think they'd like him? One would assume, but then Jesus didn't get along too well with the religious rulers or clergy of his own day. So who knows, maybe the very people who always preach about Jesus would not even recognize Jesus. This drama will be performed at Skyline Church in Rancho San Diego exactly 1 week from today, Sunday morning, April 18th at 11 o'clock a.m. For more detail, go to my website, bobsiegel.net. That's Bob Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. There's a link right on the front page. It'll give you all the information about this drama, time, room number, everything. The drama will last an hour, and I will be doing the voices of five different characters. That's next Sunday morning, April 18th. Or, just to show you how sensitive I am to time, space, and the whole phenomenon of reruns, if you are listening to our repeat Saturday night broadcast right now, which plays on April 17th, the night before, then that means from your vantage point, the show is tomorrow. Tomorrow morning. Tomorrow, dude, you can go and see this play tomorrow. Even if you're sleeping off your late night Saturday escapades, you can still make it by 11 a.m., right? Come on, don't be a pill. Drag your carcass into church and find out how Jesus would be treated if he dragged his carcass into church. But again, if you're listening right now live in real time, that's a week from today. The Melting Candle, a story of how Jesus Christ might be treated if he visited our churches Sunday, April 18th at Skyline Church, 11 o'clock a.m. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I hope you had a nice Easter despite that earthquake. If you happen to be listening to the radio, especially if you happen to be listening to KCBQ, You will have noticed that that earthquake went off about 45 minutes into the Bob Siegel show. And if you're wondering why I was so calm and collected, well, it's because I wasn't actually here. We were doing a repeat broadcast. It's easy to be calm and collected when you ain't actually in the studio. But boy, I heard these buildings were shaking. I heard that from the people in the show afterwards. Now, I was actually out at the beach at that time, and so I have to say I was pretty calm and collected, too, because there's really no building that's going to fall on you on the beach, although I never felt an earthquake last that long. It was probably only a minute, but it seemed like about 5 or 10. It seemed to go on forever. I did look out at the surf to see if it was bringing some tsunami wave, but I didn't see one, so I was fine. I was mostly wondering if my house would be standing when I got home, and it was, thank the Lord. Well, there was another kind of earthquake in the days leading up to Easter. It happened in a different part of the country. Now, had this story taken place in Berkeley, California, I doubt that anyone would have batted an eyebrow. But this is the little city of Davenport, Iowa, the heartland of America. City Administrator Craig Mallon surprised not only the citizens of Davenport, but the town council itself. He surprised them by sending out a pleasant little memo, cheerfully announcing that Good Friday was going through a name change. Well, what kind of change could that be? Pray tell us. A crisp, brand spanking new title? Spring Holiday. They were going to change it to Spring Holiday. Good one. I'll bet people just sat around a boardroom for hours coming up with that one. I suppose it was as generic as the guy could possibly be. After all, nobody's going to be offended by the celebration of springtime. Although I have to admit, these days I wouldn't put it past some winter lover to file a lawsuit. What do you mean you're celebrating spring? And that shows discrimination toward those of us that like winter. Anyway, believe it or not, and lately I'm ready to believe anything when a politician is involved, Mallon acted on the recommendation of the Davenport City Rights Commission, who informed him that the title Good Friday violated the constitutional command of separation between church and state. See, I promised you we'd have another church and state story today. Well, since the real name is Good Friday, how about a little good news? We usually don't hear good news with these stories, but I have some today. The city of Davenport responded with such a volcanic reaction that the title was immediately switched back. It was switched back before they had the Good Friday. City Councilman Bill Edmond, caught off guard as anyone else at this strange twist of secular reinterpretation, told ABC News that his phone had been ringing off the hook. Edmond says people are genuinely upset because this is nothing but political correctness run amok. Yeah, you think? In addition to quoting the Constitution, the City Rights Commission defended its action in the name of diversity. Boy, watch out. When you hear the word diversity, that should be a big yellow light. I have no problem with diversity when we're talking about what it really means. But as for the code today, it's like a flashing yellow light. Now, I do have a couple of questions for the City Rights Commission. I'll make them as simple as I can. Are you aware that the phrase separation between church and state is not even found in our Constitution? It comes from a letter written by Thomas Jefferson promising the Danbury Baptists of Connecticut that the government will never, ever interfere with their free practice of religion. And did you know that Jefferson wanted a picture of Moses for the official American seal? I know, I always hear people say, well, Jefferson wasn't a Christian. There were things about the Bible Jefferson believed. He probably wouldn't be an evangelical Christian by that standard, but whatever he believed, he wasn't too freaked out. He was of the opinion that we could have a biblically based holiday. If he was a man who was asking to use Moses as the official American seal, doesn't that tell you something? Does that not clarify Jefferson's opinion as one who would not lose it over a holiday based on the Bible? Is he not in a fair position to understand the intent of our Constitution, and as much as he is one of the authors of the cotton-picking thing? Here's another question. How exactly does it challenge diversity to allow a holiday that some will celebrate and others will just ignore with the casualness of a yawn? For many years, I was not a Christian. For almost the first 19 years of my life, I thought Christmas and Easter were celebrating stupid things. I just didn't see how it violated my civil liberties if people wanted to celebrate it, though. And if I got a day off of school, heck, it was a day off of school. They could call it Groundhog Day for all I cared. I just wanted the day off. Does not the option to believe or disbelieve speak to the heart and soul of true diversity? Would these same commissioners speak against Earth Day so as not to offend those of us who haven't embraced the global warming scare? I'll go out on a limb and guess no. Oh, just one more question. Are you aware that when you call any day a holiday, you are using a word that means holy day? Shh, keep it under your hat. Don't tell the ACLU, they haven't caught on yet. Good projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. Welcome back. 1170 KCBQ, Intelligent Talk Radio. I have an article to read to you out loud. Now, it's a very unusual news article. I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to tell you the source for this article after I've finished reading it. In an unprecedented press conference, President Obama gave some announcements that invoked immediate gasps from the crowd of stunned and startled reporters. Since that moment, all have Washington has been in a buzz as talking heads and spectators try to figure out just exactly what brought on the change. This morning, at an 8 o'clock a.m. press club gathering, President Obama calmly stated that he is tired of the public perception that he somehow disrespects his own country. "Maybe I made a mistake going out on that world tour last year," Obama said earnestly to a group of bewildered-looking Washington correspondents. "I only meant to improve our relations over sensitive issues, but it was accidentally interpreted as an apology for America, and this is a tragedy. Let me be clear. America has nothing to apologize for. Absolutely nothing. The world owes us time and time again. How many of our critics would even be alive right now if the United States had not bailed them out over the years? Our policies do not breed terrorism. Neither does Guantanamo Bay, and for that matter, neither does Israel. The very idea that Muslim terrorists are striking around the world simply because the Jews built some apartments in their own capital city should look like complete insanity to any thinking person. So let's stop spreading this nonsense once and for all. The fuel for Al-Qaeda is their own hateful religion and its commands of jihad. It is not America. It is not Israel." While seeming to be on a roll, President Obama continued to unleash some further sentiments that may have been bottled up for quite some time. "Since we are on the subject of blame, the statute of limitations has also run out on George Bush. No more claiming that I'm cleaning up George Bush's mess. I have been president for almost a year and a half now. If there is a mess, it is my own responsibility." The president also acknowledged that higher taxes and mandatory redistribution of wealth did not seem to be working in favor of a robust economy. "We've taken over the banks. We've taken over the auto industry, and yet things are more financially precarious than ever. It's just not working. The time has come to stop demonizing capitalism. When asked if his own advisors and czars may have contributed toward the crippling of America, President Obama replied, "That has certainly proven to be the case, which is why I am firing these Marxists before it's too late." Okay. That's the news article. Full disclosure time. I wrote that. It's not a real news article. I wrote that as a blog for Town Hall. Not one word of it is true. That should have become apparent after a while. I did admit it at the bottom of the blog. I wasn't trying to be fraudulent because I wrote the blog on April 1st. It was an April Fool's joke. Well, April 1st was quite some time ago, so why am I telling you about it now? Well, again, at the bottom it said, okay, you must be catching on by now, April Fool's. Then I wrote, to tell the truth, though, didn't it give you just a taste of what it might feel like to actually have a man of integrity in the White House? Come 2012, come quickly. And I admitted then at that point that that was my dual reason for writing it. One, it was a fun April Fool's gag. It was fun to write. But I wanted to have people read that and just taste what it would be like to have a president with some backbone. Now, I'm telling you about it now a week later because here's what's interesting. And I find this very interesting. Town Hall, as some of you know, has a live RSS feed. That stands for Real Simple Syndication. Some of their blogs, including mine, get picked up by other internet sites. My piece, my April Fool's piece, was picked up by sites which quoted portions of it, but they failed to mention that it was an April Fool's gag. Now, that's probably just because the whole thing was done automatically by computers that have certain word searches programmed in. But still, check this out. This is from NPR.com. They have three quotes that they're attributing to Obama. They're not attributing them to me as the guy who wrote an April Fool's article and made the whole thing up. They're attributing it to Obama. Here's one of them. Maybe I made a mistake going out on that world tour last year. Signed, Barack Obama. Here's another quote. That has certainly proven to be the case, which is why I'm firing these Marxists before it's too late. Barack Obama. Here's the third quote. While we are on the subject of blame, the statute of limitations has also run out on George Bush. No more claiming that I'm cleaning up George Bush's mess. I have been president for almost a year and a half now. If there is a mess, it is my own responsibility. Barack Obama. They're crediting that to Barack Obama. On another website, WIBR.com, same three quotes. Finally, the quote about Obama firing the Marxists was picked up by USA.com. Those are pretty big, supposedly responsible journalist internet sites. USA.com, NPR.com. Is this an alternate quantum reality? I'm starting to think maybe this really happened. Now, I also received some emails from regular readers of mine about this controversial blog. This is from Sherry. She says, "I hate you, Bob Siegel," but she says it with a big smiley face and then says, "Just kidding. But you had me going there. Wouldn't we love to hear that or even see some of it?" And then Pat writes me, says virtually the same thing. He says, "Wow, you really had me going." Tammy writes and says, "Posted a link to this article on my Facebook. The article lives on. Maybe it'll come true someday. But I think the day it comes true, our president will be a different president. What do you think?"
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back. You can always reach me at questions@bobsiegel.net, and I have some right before my eyes concerning changing the name of Good Friday to Spring Holiday. Mike writes, well, here in San Diego, we have December nights on the Prado. That's true, Mike. We used to call that Christmas nights. Now it's December nights. He says, the lovely tradition of lighting the December night's tree always brings a tear to my eye. I get the feeling, Mike, you're being just a little bit sarcastic, but I'm one of those people that loves sarcasm, so it doesn't bother me. On the same subject, Gary says, old enough to remember Christmas and Easter break, progressives sure know how to screw things up. Our friend Mark in El Cajon has a lot to say about this. He says, yep, there they go again. I'm talking about the liberals. Calling Good Friday a spring holiday so as not to offend someone? Yeah, right. These are code words that liberals don't want to offend Muslims, their newfound friends. They are newfound friends of the left because a lot of Muslims hate America almost as much as they do. They are always trying to squeeze and shape and push people into what they deem appropriate, exactly what dictatorships do. So from now on, I'm going to be calling liberals Marxists or communists. I'm sick and tired of just calling them liberals as if they are just regular people that I only disagree with. All they care about is tearing down my country and my society and its moral values so they can put into its place some Marxist communist utopia where everything will be just perfect bliss. Hogwash. Shame on all Marxist liberals, Democrats. Anybody that is a left-winger is to blame for such nonsense as wanting to change Good Friday to spring holiday. I always enjoy reading Mark's letters. One of these days we're going to have to twist his arm, though, get him to open up a little more and tell us what he really thinks about some of these issues. And this is from Diana in El Cajon with a Bible question. She says, hi, Bob. I heard that in the Old Testament it states that God wanted us to be vegetarians, that he put everything on the earth to grow that would be good for us to be healthy. In the New Testament, he changed it to us eating meat. Is this right? I'm being bad by asking you and not researching it myself, but I know you have all the answers right there in your head. You're the one to go to with hard questions. Thanks, Diana. Well, Diana, that's awfully nice of you to say that I always have all the answers in my head. Would that that were true. I do have the answer for this one, though, Diana, and actually what your friends told you is not the truth. Not only did God allow eating meat in the Old Testament, he commanded the eating of meat for certain festivals, such as the Passover. There were certain kinds of meat, such as pork, that were forbidden, such as shellfish that were forbidden. But then in the New Testament, even that was not forbidden anymore. So, Diana, I'm afraid whoever told you this was sadly misinformed. Well, you may remember, gosh, it was not quite a year ago, but almost a year ago. I had a pastor and his wife on my radio show here in the San Diego area. They were told that they were not allowed to have Bible studies in their home because their home wasn't zoned as a church. Well, they fought back to their credit, and the city backed off. You need to know, though, that this kind of stuff is continuing to go on all over the country, and I will be having other attorneys on my show in the weeks ahead to talk about more of these. But one I want to read from you right now. This is worldnetdaily.com, and I'm reading you a real article this time. It's not April Fool, but it was dated March 18th. I've had this in my file. I've been waiting for a time to get to it, but it's still very relevant news. WorldNetDaily.com. A Southern California city has ordered a Friday night Bible study involving about a dozen people to shut down its meetings by Good Friday, or members could face financial sanctions. Or they could apply to purchase an expensive permit from the city government. The new case is similar. So that's one going on here. And now they're telling us it's similar to one that's going on in Gilbert, Arizona. And then they said in Rancho Cucamonga, legal experts defending Bible study members say the city is targeting a Bible study for banishment, and officials say they are not budging. In the previous cases, San Diego case officials, this is the one that we talked about a year ago on my show, San Diego County officials apologized after a code enforcement officer tried to shut down a Bible study. And in Gilbert, officials told WND last week that they were working on a change in a zoning requirement that had been interpreted by staff members to ban Bible studies from residences. In excuse me. In Rancho Cucamonga, however, the city apparently is intentionally pursuing the closure of a Bible study, according to Brad Dacus, whose Pacific Justice Institute is working on the case. The city's stance has similarities too, but is perhaps even harsher than a pending situation in Gilbert, Arizona, and a flare-up last year over a home Bible study in San Diego County, his organization confirmed. Now, me gagging, that was not orchestrated. That was just me really gagging by coincidence. But tell the truth, doesn't the story make you want to gag? That wouldn't have been a bad effect if I had planned it that way. Story continues. Rancho Cucamonga officials are demanding that the small home Bible study group stop meeting or apply to purchase a conditional use permit that also would be required for a full church operation. Doc has said the study group has been meeting Friday nights and averages about 15 people. Let me just stop. Is this insane? A person can't have 15 people in their own home? I don't care if they want to call it a church service. Where does it say in our Constitution that the government can tell us where to worship and where not to worship? This is absolute insanity. The city recently dispatched a letter to the homeowner insisting the study is not allowed because it is a church, Dacus said. In the city, churches are required to obtain a conditional use permit in residential areas. The city has also indicated that no CUP would be granted. So they're telling them that they have to apply for a permit. Oh, and by the way, we're not going to give it to you. No CUP would be granted, and the gatherings must cease by Good Friday. Senior counsel Michael Pepper, who heads the organization's Southern California office, represents the homeowner where the Bible study meets and is contesting the orders. Imposing a CUP requirement on a home Bible study is manifestly absurd and unjust, Dacus said. I don't know of a single court in America that would approve their actions. Well, boy, there was a time when I wouldn't have known a single court in America. It's so easy these days to go, oh, it's unconstitutional. It'll never hold up in court. But have you looked at some of the judges we have in court lately? Some of these guys just make it up as they go. I mean, maybe it'll get thrown out of court. Maybe not. Anything could happen, folks. Anything. Don't put your faith in the judges. Put your faith in prayer. It says his organization previously has guided churches through the CUP process, which requires public hearings, traffic studies, architectural design reviews, and even seismic retrofits, a process that can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. We will give the city a chance to rescind its letter without litigation, but we are fully prepared to take this as far as is necessary to defend this Bible study group and countless others like it, he said. Multiple WND messages left with members of the city's building department as well as other city officials were not returned. Dacus said the city's stance is a significant problem because its definition of a church is so broad. According to their definition, a family praying over their dinner would qualify as a church, he told WND. The precedent that would be created, should the rule stand, he said, should alarm religious people across the nation. When you step back and look at communist China, home churches are being persecuted there. This isn't any different. And this isn't even a church, just a Bible study facing the same ultimatums. Well, again, I agree. It's not a church. It's a Bible study. My point is they could call it a church, and there's nothing in our Constitution that forbids that. But this idea that the Constitution is a living, breathing document, that's just code for the Constitution means what we decide it will mean. I'll see you next week.